Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, I began following politics closely in 1976, voting for the first time in the 1980 presidential election. Since that time, I've been honored to know and work closely with some phenomenal men and women of high integrity in the United States House of Representatives and in the United States Senate. Some of those we've had on this program numerous times, but there's one man I've never had the opportunity to meet face to face, but I've deeply admired him from a distance, and that man is our special guest today. Dr. Tom Coburn was first elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1994 as part of the Republican Revolution. He upheld his campaign pledge to serve no more than three consecutive terms and did not run for re-election in 2000. However, in 2004, he returned to political life and was at the end of a successful run for the United States Senate from Oklahoma. Senator Coburn was re-elected to a second term in 2010 and pledged not to seek a third term in 2016. Dr. Coburn and his wife, Carolyn, who is a former Miss Oklahoma, were married in 1968. They have three children and four grandchildren. And I say this with deep appreciation. Dr. Coburn's priorities during his time in the Senate was reducing wasteful spending, balancing the budget, improving health care access and affordability, protecting the sanctity of all human life, especially the unborn. And Dr. Coburn, I want to welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. Thank you so much for being a part of the program today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, we have you just for two segments, and these segments are going to go very, very quickly. So I want to jump right into the middle of our discussion. Since you left the United States Senate, you've been involved in what is called the Article 5 movement. What I'd love for you to do is share with our listening audience what that is and why you have chosen to invest this part of your life in that movement.
Well, the Article 5 movement is a looking at the Constitution and Article 5. Our founders gave us two ways with which to pardon that noise, with which to affect the Constitution. And Colonel George Mason rose during the Constitutional Convention, asked his fellow attendees if they never, ever knew any time in history where a central government voluntarily ceded its power back to the people. And, of course, the answer to that was no. It never happened. Cincinnati gave up, control of the Roman army, and George Washington gave up control of the army as well and limited his term. But those are the only two exceptions. And so the Article 5 movement is to use that portion of Article 5 to restore the Constitution in a way that continues the success of our country. And if you look at what's happened to us, we've seen the central government grow and grow and grow, and it become more and more expensive. We've seen the central government, the federal government, not balance its budget, mortgage the future of our children. And we've seen that even though politicians may be well-intended, when it comes to making hard choices, they'd rather get reelected than making the hard choices that are good for our families. So Article 5 allows us, if we have two-thirds of the states, to call an amendment convention that's very specific to whatever the application for that convention is, and all states participate in it and simply make recommendations back to the states. And it requires 38 states, just like if the Congress had proposed an amendment to the Constitution. It requires three-quarters of the states to approve it. So the movement is really strong. We have about 2.4 million volunteers throughout the country. We have 12 states that have already passed it. And here's the reason to do it. If somebody could show me after my 16 years in Washington a better way to return us to a bright future, then I'd jump on board with them. But this is what our founders gave us that's big enough to fix the problem as big as it is and secure liberty for the future and not sacrifice our children. So what I've done is since I left the Senate, and I left the Senate voluntarily 2 years early, and I left so because I looked and said, we're not going to fix it here. The people here, although they're nice, great people, when it comes to making the hard choices, they're not going to make them. And the examples that I would have for you is we know that we have $124 trillion in unfunded liabilities right now that's going to fall on the millennium, and nobody's doing anything to fix it. We know we waste $500 billion a year at the federal government level. Nobody wanted to help me fix that. So if it's not going to get fixed there, our founder said you have the opportunity as a citizen to fix it. And so that's what we're about, creating a grassroots army of people who love this country, who want to restore the balance of power between the states and the federal government and the balance of power between the three branches and give us the future that we were promised.
You know, Dr. Colburn, it's a delight to have you with us, and thank you so very much for taking time to be on Stand in the Gap today. I was going to ask you, why did you leave the Senate early? And, of course, you explained that. So allow me, if I may, just to dig into that a little deeper and go back to one of the things that you mentioned, and that is this. Why do you think, Dr. Colburn, that it is so difficult for people in Washington, in the House and in the Senate, to get things done these days? I mean, even since you left the House or you left the Senate, it just seems like, particularly the past couple of months, it's just bickering back and forth, one thing after another. I mean, it's almost as though some of them are out for blood. Why is it that it is so difficult to get things done in that institution that was so beautifully put together by our founders?
Well, I actually address this in the book. What we're experiencing today is factionalization. And our founders were really worried about that, that factions would soon control and that you would have infighting among factions rather than out of many one, you would see one divided into many, the opposite of what our founders intended, and on the basis of factions. And so, you know, and the other reason that I think we're where we are is with the 17th Amendment, we gave up the right of the states legislatures to control the Senate of the United States.
Hmm.
Remember, they were appointed by the state legislatures.
Right.
So therefore, the states had more power to determine. So if somebody was voting to give up states' rights, they'd get their nomination jerked and they'd get pulled back to Oklahoma and say, we're going to put somebody up there that's going to protect our rights.
Hmm.
Well, what we've done with the 17th Amendment is eliminate the ability to have better control over the federal government. And it's one weakness that I see. But the other thing that's going on is we have become very immature because our knowledge is lacking in terms of a history of the politics of our country. And so you have very few statesmen. Well, you have some, but you have very few as a percentage of those in those bodies. And they're drowned out by the 24/7 news cycle that's based on factionalization. Whether it, you know, the division, if you think about it for a minute, what's happened to our country is the Supreme Court has divided. They've made decisions that, in fact, the state should have been making. And with that has come division and then all the rest that we see.
Well, friends, we are talking with former Oklahoma Senator Tom Colburn. He is a part of the Article 5 movement. And when we come back from this brief timeout, we're going to discuss how Dr. Colburn and other highly respected individuals believe we can return to a place of constitutional self-governance and what it's going to take to get us there. Friends, I don't want you to miss this. After this very brief timeout, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teacher's editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today. This is Dave Kisser along with Gary Dull, and our special guest today is former U.S. Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. He is a strong advocate for what is called the Article 5 movement, which is seeking to secure a convention of states. And I want to go right back to you, Dr. Coburn, and ask you, could you share with our listening audience what precisely is the Convention of States resolution, and why do you believe that this approach is the most comprehensive way to get back to what our founders envisioned, and that is a constitutional self-governance?
Well, first of all, the reason I believe that this will work is this is what our founders gave us as the tool when our government became overbearing and non-responsive. So they gave us the tool. The question is, have we lost liberty? And the answer to that is certainly yes. Have we lost some of our rights? Yes. And how do we fix it? And our founders gave us the opportunity through Article 5 to allow states to call an amendments convention. And having 34 states agree to that, then the Congress has to call it. The areas that we would cover would be being financially responsible, which would inside that be a generally accepted accounting principles used in the federal government, because the federal government doesn't keep books accurately, and a balanced budget and a tax limitation. The second would be a limitation on the scope, jurisdiction, and power of the federal government. And you could have all sorts of amendments in there in terms of redefining what the Commerce Clause really means, as well as other things. So we made an application based on subject matter rather than specific amendments. And then finally, a term limitation amendment that would say that there ought to be some limitation on both terms for both elected and appointed officials. And there's a lot of background to all that, which I'm happy to go into and explain why and how. But this is easily accomplished in terms of gathering people. When you talk to people about amendment of the state, a convention of amendments, they get excited because now they know that there's something they can do. And they can become active, and they can lobby their legislature. They can ask their legislature to pass it. And once they do that, then they join the 12 states that have already done it. Possibly North Carolina this year will do it. We don't know for sure yet. But so we're over a third of the way there in terms of accomplishing what is necessary to have an amendments committee.
Senator Coburn, you know, this is very interesting, a very interesting discussion. And you know, there are even conservatives, and I'd say there are people on both sides of the aisle, but particularly there are some conservatives who say that a convention of states would provide not only for good things, but also the occasion for some very negative and undesirable things. How do you answer your conservative friends who might say that?
Well, the first thing I say is you obviously haven't studied the issue, because that's absolutely untrue. If I thought there was a potential for something harmful out of this, I wouldn't be associated with it. What is harmful is to continue to allow the federal government to take away our liberties. And so when people talk about a runaway convention, first of all, there's never been one in our history. Number two is that word didn't even come into our lexicon until 1974 when the Supreme Court justice used it because he didn't want Roe v. Wade reversed through an Article 5 convention. And the other thing you have to think about is, remember, the Congress can pass anything they want now. It still has to be approved by 38 states. So you have to assume that in anything that would be negative, that there wouldn't be 13 judiciary committees in either the House or the Senate of 13 states that wouldn't stand up and say, we're not doing this. And, of course, that's ludicrous. Because if you look at all the red conservative states, that would never happen. It could never happen. The other safety valve on this is, let's say they pass something like that. The Congress would never send it to the states because it violates the Constitution, because they're making amendments outside of the application that they made. So first of all, if they pass something like that, it'll never get to the states. If it got to the states, you have to believe that everybody out there wants us to lose our freedom. And, you know, having been in 28 states in the last 2 years, I can tell you just the opposite of that is true. It's certainly true for Oklahoma, North Carolina. All the southern states and many of the Midwestern states and Northwestern states don't agree with that at all. They want their freedom back. And even if you're hardcore liberal, the real question is who gets to decide my freedom? A bunch of people who are unresponsive in Washington, or me at my state level, or me as an individual? So I just discount that if they read the book and they still feel that way, then what they've done is they've belied legitimacy and truth.
Senator, I know you do have a new book out called Smashing the D.C. Monopoly. You've referenced that a couple of times. I'd love for you to share not only a little bit of the thesis behind the book, the theme of the book, but also share with our listeners how they can procure their own copy of that book as well.
Yeah, it's called Smashing the D.C. Monopoly, using Article 5 to restore freedom and limit the federal government. And the reason I wrote the book is that people don't know the history of our founders. They don't know this Article 5 component. So what we did is I put some of my experience as a politician in Washington, showed examples. I gave all the history of conventions in the past and what caused us to have a constitutional convention, when in fact we had the Articles of Confederation. And then I go into, here is the basis of how this works, here's why it works, and then I list, here's why it's safe. And I also give a history of everybody else that's ever tried to do this and where they are in the process. So it's both an educational book and a call to action for us to actually take control and do what our founders gave us, the ability to limit the power and scope of the federal government. And we've not used it. And I think our founders would be astounded today to note that we've not ever used this tool they gave us to limit the power of the federal government.
Dr. Coburn, let me ask you this. If citizens want to find out more about this and how they can be involved, let's say they're in a state that has not moved this direction yet, but they would love to see their state do that, where would they go? What would they do to get themselves educated?
They do two things. One is they go to conventionofstates.com. All the history of this is there as well, frequently asked questions. And then they buy this book if they really want to know the history and be able to defend what they're doing. If we're to survive as a nation, it's going to be the people that cause us to survive. It's not going to be the politicians. It's going to be us acting as sole actors in the political scene to push our state representatives to fix what's wrong. And so they can buy it online at any of the online purchases. They can go to Convention of the State. And by the way, any money that's made on this book doesn't go to me. I wrote this totally free. I researched it totally free. It all goes to conventionofstates.com to help us secure more states in terms of moving our country in the right direction.
Dr. Coburn, you know, as I said in my previous question, there are some people and some conservatives who actually do not agree with you and do not, of course, many of them do not want to see Article 5 to come into fruition. And then again, I'm just sort of trying to get down to the bare roots of this. What are you doing to try to convince them that this is the best way and the only way to go? I mean, you know, all of the states have accepted public welfare and public education and the federal government, and running both of these is a violation of the Constitution. How can that be changed, and what do you think going to Article 5 will do to change that?
Well, first of all, that's the reason I wrote the book, is so they'd actually have the knowledge. Because most of the people who are opposed to this are afraid. Our country wasn't built on fear. It's built on trust in our faith and doing what real truth is. So when you have those naysayers, if you go look at it, half of the people that are naysayers are trying to raise money off trying to stop it.
I can tell you how good we're doing. When George Soros funds $8 million for 230 organizations to try to stop us, you know we're doing what's right. That's the first thing. The second thing is if you learn this, you actually have the responsibility now to go do something. I wrote two books before this book. I wrote one called Breach of Trust, which shows actually how Washington operates and how it turns outsiders into insiders. Then I wrote a book called The Debt Bomb, What's Getting Ready to Happen to Us. And it is. So people can say, no, we're not going to do this, and that'll be the choice if we don't get the 34 states. Mm-hmm. But what the consequences will be on them, because here's the consequence for a millennial today. Over the next 50 years, every millennial will have to either pay back or the federal government will have to inflate $30,000 per one. So if you take on about $1.7 million per millennial over the next 50 years, they're going to have to pay back what we've stolen from them. So that's called a marked decrease in standard of living. So we can ignore it and we can pass it on. But when I go talk to grandparents, I say, if you had to have your Medicare and Social Security cut 10%, if it meant saving the future for your kids, would you do that? And they say, yes, in a minute. Because that's all it really requires, is us making sacrifices rather than barring against the future. And this is a way to do it. So there's going to be opposition. You know, if you read through the Bible, every time a prophet stood up or somebody stood up to speak a truth, there was opposition. And most of the time it was from the zealots that were more interested in their position than they were truth. And I've also said this, you show me a better way to fix our country, I'll come help you.
Senator, thank you so much for what you've shared. And I want you one last time before we let you go at the end of this segment, I want you to mention again your book and where people can go to get that, because I think it's vitally important that they get themselves educated with respect to this topic.
It's the title of the book is Smashing the DC Monopoly, and you can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, WND, or any bookstore.
Friends, you've been listening to former Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn. He's been our guest today in segments 1 and 2. Thank you so much for being with us, Senator Coburn. We'd love to have you back at a later date. Friends, when we come back, we're going to talk about what the left is now skillfully doing to turn the tragic attack in London Sunday into something that it was not. Please join us after this brief timeout for that discussion in segment 3.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Friends, we're going to move into this discussion of what happened in Finsbury Park there in London on Sunday, this attack that is being labeled as an attack against primarily Muslims. But before we do that, we try to keep you abreast and aware of what's going on literally around the globe. And we have had a report that has come in. In fact, this is the second time we have received information about this. And it's something we want to bring to you, not only as a news item, but more importantly, something that we want you to take to God's throne of grace in diligent prayer. Gary, share with our listeners what we know and how they can pray along with us.
Yes, Dave, I'd be glad to do that. I'm associated with a man by the name of Paul McCauley, who is with Aviation Missions, and his ministry is one that's very, very, it's an urgent type of a ministry where they will go into areas where missionaries have a need and evacuate them through airlifting and so forth and so on. And the first piece of information that came to us said that there is earnest and fervent prayer that's needed for the safety of missionaries serving in Mali. And the further information on that is that there was an armed attack at one of the locations in Mali. It was a general attack, not a civil one, or not like a civil war or anything like that. It was just a general attack. At this particular point, we do not know who or what is behind that. But so far, 32 Europeans have been evacuated. Folks who are there, missionaries who are there in Mali, were not able to communicate with their families here in the United States of America. And so, you know, it's a real serious situation going on there in Mali. The information that we've just received, David, says that there could be more attacks. They are actually expecting more attacks in the very near future. Again, We do not know the background. We do not know who is actually leading these attacks. But the missionaries in Mali right now are in need of prayer. Their lives are, you know, I don't know that they're at stake, but they certainly are in danger. And so we are asking people all across our network to pray for the missionaries in Mali. And folks, if you happen to know of a missionary who is serving in Mali, you may want to try to get in touch with them yourselves to see if there is any further information. I do have a number here, however, that you can call if you're interested. And it is this. I will give it to you in just a moment. So you might want to get a piece of paper and pencil or something to write it down with. The number is 405-604-5140. That's 405-604-5140 in the event you want to try to find out more information about this attack on missionaries over in Mali. David?
Gary, thank you so much for bringing us up to date with that. And friends, we're going to pray at the end of the program. And Gary, I'm going to ask you to do that. But for now, I want to shift gears just a little bit, because this really is related to even what you just shared, Gary, kind of distantly related, but in a way very directly related. This past Sunday evening, of course, a 48-year-old or 47-year-old man, now they're saying, drove a van into a group of Muslims near a mosque in Finsbury Park in London. He, according to reports and according to some videos that have been released, was shouting, "I want to kill all Muslims. I did my bit. You deserve it." Of course, one man was killed tragically. 10 others were wounded. The perpetrator, as best we can tell from the images we've seen of him, was a clean-shaven, curly-haired man who wore a white T-shirt. He suffered cuts to his face and his hands and was filmed repeatedly shouting, "Kill me," to the men who grabbed him. And of course, it was a group of Muslim men that grabbed him. And his arrest is now based on the fact that he is a terror suspect, killed one man. He continued, as he was driven away in the police van, to kind of goad the crowd and waved at them, smiled at them, even blew some kisses to them. Gary, I want this to be understood unequivocally. This was a horrific event. It was totally, totally unnecessary. The perpetrator should spend the rest of his life in prison. And the reason I say that is because the United Kingdom has no death penalty. So he should spend the rest of his life in prison for what he did. But here's where my concern comes with the way the left is describing this incident. They are using this incident to underscore the fact that attacks against Muslims is equivalent to the attacks by Muslims against Christians and those that are non-Muslims. May I say this very, very clearly? To try to create that kind of equivalency is absurd. Yes, it is true that attacks on Muslims has risen, and that is totally unjustifiable. It is awful. It is something that should never take place. But the major attacks that have occurred against Muslims are not taking place by state sponsors of terror. They are not being led by major terrorist groups. This situation in London on Sunday was one man, a lone actor. He should not have done it. Again, I cannot say this in any more strong terms. He should spend the rest of his life in prison for his horrific act, but he was not part of a larger network. Radical Muslims, Gary, run states. They are in charge of countries. And this London attack marks the first major terror attack in Great Britain against a Muslim since 2013. And yet attacks by Muslims in the UK, we've had three major ones: the Westminster terror attack, the Manchester arena bombing, and then the London Bridge attack. And then we had something last night that occurred in Paris. The name of the perpetrator has not been released. So, Gary, trying to draw equivalency between this isolated incident and what is happening on a grand scale by the Muslim religion and Muslim nations and Muslim terror entities, Gary, it's not the same. I'd love to have your comments.
Well, it's not the same. And certainly we in no way, shape or form want to see these kind of attacks occur, whether it's Muslim on others or others on Muslims. But David, let me ask you a question. What Have they found out really what is behind this attack? In other words, is there a possibility that the individual who conducted this particular attack over in London, could this at all be a setup, do you think? You know, Islam will do everything it can, even in the area of lying and going through other channels, to be able to make themselves look good. We've talked about that many times here in the program. And I'm just wondering, as I am watching all of this develop, if this individual was an individual who maybe in some way, shape, or form, though he was not Muslim, might have been pro-Muslim, or was put up to conduct this attack to really steer away thoughts of many people around the world who are saying, well, other people beside Muslims are just as bad because they are attacking and killing people too. Have you ever given that some thought in the last day or two on this?
Gary, to be quite honest with you, I had an extensive conversation with someone who's very well informed with respect to Islamic ideology and to what John Guandalo, with Understanding the Threat, even very clearly communicated on this program yesterday, is that Muslims with extremely sinister intent have lied repeatedly. They have done all kinds of things to cover up and to distract from what their genuine motivation is. So, yes, Gary, that has gone through my mind. Is there any way to prove that? Of course, at this point, there is not. But I will say this. It was extremely strange to watch that man be surrounded by Muslim men and to hear, if everything is being communicated accurately, that Muslim imam from the Finsbury Mosque, which, by the way, we talked about it yesterday, has incredible ties, lengthy ties to Islamic terrorism. To hear the imam from that mosque shouting, leave him alone, turn him over to the authorities, all of that, Gary, is very, very strange to me. It does not fit an MO that you would normally see. If you know anything about countries where someone does something against Islam, they tend to want to enact justice right there on the spot. And I could give a variety of illustrations that I'll choose not to do right now because they're very graphic. So, yes, Gary, that did go through my mind. Is there any way of proving that? Probably not. But we don't know much. The authorities aren't releasing a lot of information. So, Gary, where this is going to go, we just don't know yet.
Well, that's it. And, you know, I was watching Sky News, and maybe you happen to see that as well. But Sky News, there was a reporter there who was actually interviewing somebody who saw this attack. The person being interviewed was a Muslim. And, David, he was basically saying the same thing that you said the imam was saying, and that is, turn him over to the authorities and let them handle it. And, you know, that really is not the direction that most Muslims would go in a case like this. And so that's what made me wonder, do you think there is something behind this that we don't yet see out there clearly?
Well, Gary, the old phrase, don't believe everything you see, because everything you see may not be actually true. That may apply here. I will say this, Gary, you've got to also understand, if you've been a visitor in that area around London where this mosque is, if you've been a visitor in Birmingham, the second largest city in the UK, you will understand that there are Sharia compliant zones in the country of England. And this is part of the dilemma they have. And in those Sharia compliant zones, it is not British law that is the authority. It is Islamic Sharia law. So if this mosque was in one of those Sharia compliant zones, why would they want to turn this man over to British authorities? That doesn't really make sense. Well, friends,
point.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about this and a little bit about the most expensive U.S. house race in history that's occurring today. Don't miss it after this brief timeout.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
In this final segment, I want to go back to what we were discussing right prior to the break, and that has to do with this attack in London over the weekend. Gary, you brought up a question. I'm glad you brought it up. It is something that had been going through my mind. It was a conversation that I'd had, a very lengthy and in-depth conversation with another individual who knows a lot about Islam and its motives. But Gary, I want to take that and comment on what the media has been doing. They have been playing incessantly over the last 24 to 36 hours the video of this man as he's pulled out of the truck. He's placed in a police van to be carted off. They've talked about it. And of course, the mayor of London, who is himself a Muslim, has had much to say about this. Theresa May, the prime minister, has equally had much to say. But Gary, what troubles me is this. There are a number of those that are Christians or call themselves Christians who constantly defend, and they are using this incident as an occasion to do so again. They constantly defend and protect the Islamic world every time there is an attack, and they will use a phrase like this. Well, this was just an extremist. This was an aberration of the religion of Islam. This is not the reality of what Islam is. This was just someone who took an extreme position and has perpetrated an evil act. Islam is not to blame. The ideology is not behind this. And yet, Gary, over and over and over, and again yesterday in Paris, and the name of the man has not been released. My thinking would be this. Is there a chance he's a Muslim and they've not released his name because of that? We don't know yet. But over and over and over, these attacks organized by terror organizations, organized or coming out of state sponsors of terror, and I'm talking about majority Muslim countries that are state sponsors of terror, that's what the religion of Islam is. That's what the religion of Islam does. And yet, Gary, Christians continue to defend the religion. How in the world can they do that?
Well, I think some of them, Dave, do it out of ignorance. And of course, I know that Christians and others who listen to this radio program realize that we talk about Islam a lot because we are very concerned about Islam. And Islam is more than a religion. It's an ideology. It's something that it's a culture. And as we've emphasized many, many times on this radio broadcast, whether it's ourselves or IQ Rauzzoli and others that we have with us, Tom Wallace and various other folks we have with us, Islam has the desire to take over the entire world. They want to see Sharia law established. There are those, David, who would want to see Sharia law established here in the United States of America. And so for a Christian, and let me even put it this way, for a Christian pastor to come forward and to defend Islam in any way, shape, or form and say, well, it's a religion of peace and we shouldn't talk against Islam and we shouldn't say that Islam is a wicked culture is a wicked ideology. They simply do not understand what the teaching of Islam is all about. Whether you are talking about what's in the Quran or what's even in the words of Muhammad, people need to understand exactly what Islam is all about. Preachers need to preach about it. People need to study up on it because, you know, Dave, I was thinking earlier this morning of 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, where it says that Satan as a roaring lion seeks whom he may devour. And do you know something, Dave? That's exactly what Islam is doing. And we need to understand that, that Islam is one of the devil's tactics to destroy Christianity and Christians and those who would be friends of Christianity in the world today. It's high time we understand that. It's high time that we wake up and realize the truth of this. If not, we're going to see more and more of Islam taking over different portions of the world simply out of the, if you want to call it ignorance, or just the lack of desire to take a stand against this wicked culture that's out there called Islam.
Gary, you know, as a preacher of the gospel, and I know as an evangelist for 33 years, the only way, bottom line, that this is going to change is the gospel of Jesus Christ, changing mm-hmm. the hearts of people. And while we have an intense love for those that are enslaved in this false ideology called Islam, and should be doing and are doing everything in our power to try to get the gospel to them, Gary, that does not negate the responsibility that our government has to keep the citizenry of the United States safe from nefarious entities, whether they be terror organizations or state sponsors of terror. Our government has a responsibility. And Gary, that is not incompatible with the gospel, is it?
No. And in fact, that's what Romans chapter 13 teaches. And, you know, I think that that's what Donald Trump is trying to do. You know that, Dave? I think Donald Trump understands, excuse me, I think that Donald Trump understands the seriousness of Islam. And this is what he's trying to do with his immigration policy. He's trying to do everything that he can to keep people who would become threats, Islamists, who would become threats to the United States of America from coming into this nation, perhaps even as one disguised as a refugee. The government, according to Romans chapter 13, has the responsibility to protect its people against the terror of evil. And Islam is a culture of evil. And whether it's Donald Trump or whether it is the government in general, those in leadership have the responsibility to protect the citizenry of the United States of America. We need to pray that that can be done, and that can be done in an expedient way.
Well, Gary, I could not agree with you more. And even as we're talking, we were going to bring up the fact that the most expensive House of Representatives race is taking place today, the culmination of it, conclusion of it in the state of Georgia. $50 million, Gary, that's unbelievable, between Republican mm-hmm. Karen Handel and Democrat John Ossoff. And some of our stations probably don't carry the news at the bottom of the hour, but Karen did an interesting thing after she voted. She put her "I voted" sticker on her shoulder or on her blouse and said, "My opponent cannot say that because John Ossoff lives outside the area that he's running to represent." So
interesting.
It's very, very interesting. And friends, keep your eyes and ears on that race. Some are saying this will be a telltale sign of Donald Trump's future, the Republican Party's future, if Karen loses. Millions upon millions of dollars have come in from the other side, from outside the state of Georgia, from outside the district. Karen has been significantly outspent. It's a David and Goliath situation from a spending standpoint. If she wins, it sends a message to the contrary. So all of that will be interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about it tomorrow. But Gary, I want us to take time to go to prayer, and I want to bring before you the opportunity and the responsibility of praying for the missionaries in Mali, as well as what's taking place in the UK, in Europe, and even here in the United States. There are ominous threats to our nation, Gary, that need to be dealt with. So would you pray about all of these things?
Indeed. Father in heaven, as we come to you here today, we just ask you, number one, to protect these missionaries and others who are there in Mali, and particularly with the men like Paul McCauley, who have the responsibility of going in there and airlifting them. I pray that you'd give them the wisdom and the strength to do that. But whether we are looking at London or Washington or Great Britain or the United States of America or any other part of this world, Lord, it is my prayer that truth will be proclaimed and change people's lives under the sound of the gospel. And we'll thank you for it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Friends, join us again tomorrow for another power-packed installment of Stand in the Gap Today. And until then, stand up for truth right where you are.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.